You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
We have got the Art Space crew who are part of the River Remains Ake Tonu Atu, which is happening right now. And we've got Y, we've got Olivia, we've got Tyson and Bronte, and Famile is on the way. But I think maybe we'll just start by saying, kia ora, welcome everyone. And do you want to sort of introduce yourselves? Might be a little bit easier. Say who you are and a little tiny bit about your practice as well. Bronte, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure thing. I'm Bronte. Hello, everybody. So I mainly do sort of large sort of sculpture installation pieces sort of around religious trauma, sort of looking at weaving in sort of like generational trauma and sort of major historical points within sort of the history of Aotearoa and how that kind of all sort of collapses in on one another. Yeah.
Nice and light, you know, fluffy.
Yeah, just light, hairy stuff for yeah. Sunday morning.
Nice. And Tyson.
Hello. My name's Tyson.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a background in sound, like sound design. But recently I've just been making sculptural works and like poetic sculptural works. And I guess in the exhibition is the bow and arrow, so that's kind of funny.
it's quite a beautiful bow and arrow. We'll talk a little bit more about the specifics of what that looks like. I like the lasers as well in that. It's very good. But we'll talk a bit more about those specifics very shortly. Liv, do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Olivia, and currently doing my master's at Elam. And what about my practice?
Yeah. What do you make, Liv? What do you make?
I don't know what you're going to call them, paintings. But you'll see in the new artist show that it's all quite different. A whole new world.
Lots of dogs.
Whole new world.
Yeah. And why?
Hello. My name is Y, and I just graduated from Elam with Bronte and Olivia, so it's quite good to just see them again at the show. And my practice is always be informed by post-colonial theories. I was like focusing on like cultural identities, but for this particular show or like later research, I want to focusing on the social relations. So so this particular body of work is my starting point of like looking into how I am as an artist being To'iwi, like how do I make work by talking about like this social relation with tangata whenua. So it's kind of quite. I don't know. It's exciting, but it's like really carefully navigated area as well. Mm. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for that little intro. So, I think people at home might be thinking, well, these are all really like quite diverse practices, and you guys all have very diverse areas of speciality as artists as well. But this is kind of an unusual show, The River Remains Ake Tonu Atu, because it's one of those sort of emerging artist shows. I mean, that word emerging artist is a bit like, what does that mean? But it's kind of bringing all these different voices together into a space to kind of talk about things in a sort of process where you guys have been in art space for a month now, is that right? About a month? Yeah. And like working on these projects and kind of working on, I guess, kind of collaborations with each other in the sense that you're negotiating that space together, and then it's just opened up. So it's kind of a mentoring process. It's a little bit different to a lot of shows that would go on in a gallery like Art Space. What's that process been like for you guys? Has it been something that you've enjoyed? Bronte?
It's been quite interesting. I think one of the most interesting aspects is sort of navigating sort of as emerging artists, navigating...
Air quote marks.
Navigating this relationship with Art Space as quite a large institution, and sort of trying to understand how much power we have in that role. And even though we've only been in there for a short amount of time, I think because of that shortness of time, there's like a lot of like condensed pressure. And so you're like really up against the institution whilst being within it and whilst being accountable within it. And so there's like lots of these layers, and it's just been, yeah, really amazing to try and begin to navigate that.
Anyone else sort of had that same experience? You feel like it's a weird, kind of a contradiction, but also quite an exciting process to be able to sort of challenge something from inside it and sort of negotiate those things as well. What have you guys experienced with that?
I think I always like quite anti-authority, like that kind of person. And when you're working with an institution that you know that you will learn some experience, like essentially like you can take or leave something. But it just kind of like this push and pull is really interesting, and sometimes you feel a little bit pressure to, you will always question like, is it your gut feeling? Is it right or wrong? Like, will it put your practice down because you're just being a very young and naive person, but also you don't want to be like just like dragged along by this institution that you don't know what exactly it is. Yeah, this is how I feel.
I heard a phrase used in reference to the show of holding the institution to ransom.
Yes.
And I'm curious, what does that mean exactly? Because I just heard it a few times.
I guess it's sort of what Bronte was speaking about sort of challenging the university but being within it. So to some extent, you're complicit to this. Your relationship or working within an institution is, holding it to ransom was you came up with it, Tyson, eh?
Kind of.
It was kind of like a funny. There was a workshop going on at the time, and we were talking about, what it means to be held accountable for things.
I remember positive reinforcement, but I forgot what comes with it.
Yeah.
No.
I guess we all come out of like university beings. Okay, so I guess there was a sense that one thing that united us was that we were all people of colour, and we were being governed by like a Pākehā system of representation.
It's picking you up. We're just doing mic checks in here. It is picking you up.
And I guess now within contemporary discourse, there's a lot of like returning back to this idea of self-determination, where like people of colour determine how they want to be represented, and to kind of dismantle powers of whiteness, which allows like contemporary art to flourish in. So I guess we held our art space at ransom with that sentiment. And that in turn allowed us to, as Bronte says, fold in back into the institution, but in a positive way, which was kind of like the outcome, which was like a really nice, happy, family orientated event in art space, as opposed to like a drunk, like loser.
So that was talking about Friday, where you had a sort of a friends and whānau kind of opening and invited people that sort of meant a lot to you guys in your communities to come into the space and see what you've been working on, which is a little bit different for how shows at institutions like Art Space often run, where, as you say, Tyson, is often a bit of a booze up and people go for the wine more than the art, and it's nice to...
And the schmoozing.
Lots of networking happens.
Schmoozing
along. Well, maybe we should talk a little bit about your specific works that you've all gotten here, because I can imagine what it looks like in my head because I've seen it, but not everyone at home will have seen it. So maybe, do you guys want to give us a breakdown of what it looks like, your particular works look like when you walk into Art Space? Bronte, shall we start with you again?
Yeah, sure. So I guess if you walk into the main gallery, you'll see Y's work, and then just behind Y's work you'll see mine, which is basically it's a large metal frame which has some river rock and oi and carex planted in amongst the river rock, and then there's like a there's a linen fabric that hangs in the center, which has some text along it. So the metal frame is I tried to replicate a metal frame based on the First Kingdom Hall that was built in New Zealand, which was built in the 1950s in Waimea in the Hokianga. And the text on the inside is taken from a letter from a man named Wariki, who wrote to the William Reverend Yates in 1836 at the First Te Waimate Inland Mission. And so the idea of all these materialities coming together is about sort of looking at these, for me, these three major points of historical moments that I kind of seen as a wounding on not only a population but on like the whenua itself, mm-hmm. and sort of how these all kind of collapse into one another and how it all kind of connects back up to me in a way, because I grew up as a witness until I was 12 and then I left the faith, me and my family, and so I'm looking at how that trauma kind of evolved and was born out of that, and they're all interconnected and they can't be separated one from another.
And it's quite striking as well, like visually as a work. It's got a huge presence, this like massive steel structure. Steel? Is it steel?
Yeah, steel.
Yeah. Steel. And it's you get a lot of sense of heaviness and these kind of big ideas coming through that materiality as well. So thank you, Bronte. We're going to quickly say hello. Kia ora to Whamile, who's just arrived. How are you?
Good.
We're just going around and chatting about what everybody's works look like and what they are about in the actual space at Art Space. Tyson, do you want to tell us a bit about your work?
So what is my work? So the title of my work is Although You Give Me a Growling, I'll Be Waiting in Your Wings, Ake Tonu Atu. So I guess it's the idea of the idea of truth, or like finding truth, like a place where truth exists in one spot. But that, for me, I don't think that will exist in like a really linear sense, because like the intersections of race, class, gender, what's the other one?
Sexuality.
I was like, I don't know, my brain's, I can't be bothered anymore. And I guess those intersections always kind of collide and kind of come into contact with each other, and like the way that we kind of try and like
navigate those things.
Navigate like notions of victimhood and like whose victimhoodness overrides someone else's.
It's a very heavy conversation to have, because it's happening all the time.
It's quite stifling. And then I guess that kind of, if you don't have the correct language for the way that you want to speak about something, therefore you're kind of exiled. And I think that's even having language to be educated requires a certain amount of privilege. So that already has some kind of like boundary associated with it.
Yeah, totally. Well, it's a really beautiful work as well. You sort of walk into a dark space and you've got the arrow that you're talking about before, the bow and arrow with the like laser cross on the wall. And then there's like a video work as well in the corner, and sort of lots of beautiful, mucky, gorgeous mud on the floor as well. And it's like a nice, like dense atmosphere, I think, that space.
So it's also got, there's a circular cage, which is kind of a reference to the panopticon and like the idea of like paranoia associated with like surveillance and
internet age,
whatever, like whatever autonomy you think you have, I don't think people have it as much as they think they do. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Stay paranoid. So that's kind of like my work.
Nice. Liv, what about you? Olivia,
it's kind of like a direct connection to my work, I guess. I'm always paranoid, and paranoid is all the time. But the work at ArtSpace at the moment for me is really a combination of that. Like, I've got I actually took this opportunity to be able to work with someone outside from the group. So I hit up a friend of mine at Elam, and he hooked me up with Tane Vantra. He's my performer, I guess.
So like this was probably, I think, mm-hmm. the thing that maybe everybody would have noticed first walking into ArtSpace was you go in, there's all these incredible works, you've got like wise, wonderful ropes and knots, and then you can see the dark room of Tyson's, and you've got finally your beautiful yellow room, which we'll talk about in a minute as well, and Bronte's massive steel structure. But then there was also a man sitting on a mirrored platform wearing a helicopter hat.
A live man.
A live, yeah. real human man. And that's part of your work. This man is part of your
little
work.
Little boy.
Tane. Yeah.
Tane.
And so how did that, what's that about? Like, because you were saying before you're a painter. Well, you said yeah. a painter and shrugged, but.
Yeah, I mean, in light of all the stuff that I've been doing, you know, with the libraries.
So you've been involved with the yeah. Save the Fine Arts Library campaign.
Yeah. yeah, and having to deal with the university and sort of realizing the, or like these new understandings of how the university operates and their, you know, their relationship with the arts within the university is, yeah, it came to new understandings, but also having to perform within that group mm. also, but within the university as well, to these sort of like, yeah, just having to perform different roles within these political, you know, mm. Protest groups or whatever you want to call yeah. them. And so the helicopter boy, he's sort of, I had this idea of Eagle One, this helicopter sort of surveilling the city 24/7, and sort of that being the university where they're sort of surveilling and, you know, cracking that whip.
Oh yeah.
So he's my helicopter boy. He wears a propeller hat on his head. And it looks quite homemade. I made it myself.
But also quite glamorous. It's very shiny.
Yes. Yeah. That chrome.
Yeah.
And he's shirtless. He's got some baggy pants on, some army boots, and sort of just sits on this platform that's suspended up quite high, and it's got like mirrors at the bottom side of it.
Watching everyone,
but also like he has no capacity for reflection. That's why it's on the underside of he's naughty
Ooh,
boy.
Nice.
And then I've got some screen prints as well of an image of a dog and its owner having just won best dog in the show. And that's kind of in reference to, again, that performativity and having to perform and meet these standards, and but in a fun way. It's kind of just yeah.
And then you've funny. Got all the little dogs on the floor as well.
Yeah, that's our protest group.
Yeah,
you're in there, Rachel.
I'm in there. That's yeah. nice.
Yeah. yeah.
All the little angry dogs of war. Maybe. Yeah. They all look much, much too friendly. I feel like we're all far too friendly for
well,
that.
That's the thing. It's like we're this group of friends and like the art community coming together, more trying to work towards this creating positive change, and mm. we're just like a bunch of friendly dogs.
Bunch of friendly dogs. On that note, what's your work about? What are we going to see when we walk into ArtSpace? You want to sit with the yellow mic there. What do you see when we walk into ArtSpace? You're actually the first work we encounter.
Yes, it's quite nice that it's the first. So when you walk up the stairs of ArtSpace, you will see this giant chunky rope thing that I made. It's a hanging, I think it's called the landing. I heard someone is called the landing. It's quite nice because the material itself, like, it represents my arrival or my many, many other Chinese communities that came here way before me and essentially, like, have their families and, like, grow the community together from that end. So my work is, so from the material, the knots that I chosen to be included, they generate a narrative that is connecting the past and the present and essentially extending to the future in the hopes that we would, because I can only speak for myself or maybe a little bit of extension of my cultural group to say that. So it's like a, it's more like a letter or like a remembrance or anything that's kind of like that, to remember that we could form a very friendly relationship with Tangata Whenua, because now I can see the two groups has some, what can I call it? like there's a divide, mm-hmm. like a separation, a segregation.
Between Tawiwi and Tangata Whenua, so you
yes, say. Yes. So so this is like a form of like a nice, like on a nicer note, it's like a kind of goodwill and blessing, because like it's in the knots that I use, especially that like very complicated knots within the knots.
Mm. they're quite like remarkable things to look at in themselves. They're these really beautiful, intricate knots, and as you're saying, knots within knots. I was just looking at that, my fingers were sort of feeling sore just imagining trying to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that particular bigger knots is representing eternity. Oh my god!
I don't even know how to say eternality. I don't know.
So it's like an eternal. It's kind of like a reconciliation, like life after life after life, and everlasting friendship, which not many people would know about the knots meaning, because it's quite common to see. Like you would see it everywhere. Like when there's like a Chinese household and everything, because it does represent the ultimate blessing, but it's somehow lost in translation, I think. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so like I was bringing all these knots and its meaning to this big rope of weaving knots thing. I still don't know how to name this piece.
Big rope of weaving knots thing does describe it. So,
but yeah, so they this meaning that they carry, essentially carry narrative, and I see them as like quite a love letter in sculpture form, so that I send to our society, because essentially I think not that I think that everyone just love everyone, love is the answer, but I think friendliness is like something to remember, and that's why I employed not as well, because before that we have a better writing system or like a spoken language, we use knots to actually like, I need to kill that cow or something. Like,
yeah.
It's like a note ticking.
Yeah.
So I think like this is the two knots ropey thing is kind of functioning that way. Yeah. And I was also playing with a lot of like a language and what could be translated and what can't, because like from everyone hearing how I talk, you would see how much I struggle with
English. You don't struggle, you do very
so I think so I can avoiding to speak in like language that is very is like not avoidable, like to like retreat it or returning to a language that I could function very well, and taking a language that could translate, like maybe some people would understand, especially Tangata Whenua, because the rope itself is, because I will explain it later, but so this all these things kind of like me we kind of avoiding to talk to the institution.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like I am in the institution, but I'm not talking to it.
You're sort of surpassing the institution. You're talking to the people coming in, maybe, but not the space itself.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm actually like really limiting who I am talking to.
Yeah.
But I also quite conflicted with having to write in English, because it's just like this thing about language, like as much as you want to own it.
It's really tricky to communicate across those.
Yeah.
Different cultural and language divides.
Yeah.
In an institutional context on top of that. It's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So so it's quite a simple work, but I got a lot of like complex thoughts that is embedded to it. Mm. So maybe I will get the chance to actually talk more in the artist talk, because I feel like I'm taking too much time.
No, it's good. It's really good. But we will chat to Famile now. Yes. I'll spin this mic around.
A yellow
mic for Famile, who has made this wonderful yellow room amongst other things at ArtSpace. Do you want to tell us about that?
Well, the yellow room has been an idea that's sort of transitioned from when I was still studying, and I was going to introduce the idea at the end of my year four, but it was turned down because it wouldn't have worked out with the space, but I guess it was waiting for ArtSpace to welcome me with open arms to do demolition in their space. The Yellow Room is simply a story of myself revisiting the actual house where my family and I grew up before our mother died. That house held a lot of memories for all of us, and it was the happiest time in our lives and also our childhood. So I guess that's where the Yellow Brick Road home is, essentially me thinking I'm Dorothy in the actual story, travelling back to revisit a place where I could say I was truly happy, and then the world and my mum died, and then our lives changed completely. And so that was like essentially a space where we all, it was like the middle ground for all of us. And it was also the place where our lives changed completely. And so that's why I created this space, because yellow to me is, for me personally, yellow makes me happy. No matter how bad the day is, no matter if everything's coming crumbling down, if I see yellow, I'm all goods. But it really, I wanted to find a way to capture people's attention, but also find a way to pay tribute and to honour my parents that have all died. All the photos in my space of my parents that have all passed away, which are my two mothers and my father. And the Yellow Brick Road is essentially for myself. I'm travelling back, but like you guys know the story, The Wizard of Oz, I haven't reached my destination yet. So I believe the Yellow Brick Road is going to continue somewhere else, but I don't know where.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was just so significant in my practice, and also for myself as a person to do that idea, because it's like something that'll just, it's like one of those things, if you don't do it, you will never know the impact that it can have on your community or the people around you. And for 25 years, I've never really spoken about my mother. So it's a real honor for her, for people to know that she taught me a skill that I handmade, all the lays in the space.
They are totally beautiful as well, so, like felting and, just gorgeous.
It was just created from her design, which is just a square.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. So, I would have never picked that. They're so intricate. I didn't realise they were just a square.
I'm still working on the, because I always had to cut them up when I answered back to her. And gave her a hard time. She said, okay, you're going to be cutting those for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And I was so angry at her, I just wouldn't look at her. But I wish now that I'd turn around and looked and paid attention, because I would have been able to see how she made the designs just from putting it onto the needle.
That's amazing, yeah.
So for 25 years, everyone's never really heard of her or known her story, but now they do, and you know, I'm honored that God chose me, you know, chose her to be my mother, and I'm thankful to the universe and, you know, all these amazing people that have helped me put together this, because it's like, you know, you have this idea in your head, and that's one of the things I learned from jewelry, because I'm a contemporary jeweler trained, and I've learned that I can take a picture and lift it from the picture and make an object.
Yeah.
And I think that connection that I learned from jewelry has helped me do what I've done in art space, because it's a real hard thing. People think, oh, yeah, I can just draw something and then it doesn't work like
that. It's not that easy,
It's not that easy. But it's been wonderful working with the other artists as well, because the experience, their knowledge has, you know, that engagement really helped us create something phenomenal.
Yeah.
And, you know, people were, on the opening night, people that I knew that came, they were just so blown away by the work that they saw. And, you know, for me, it's an honor, you know, to be a part of it. And I'm just happy that I got to share a story that had been sitting dormant for a very long time.
Well, we're lucky to be, you know, welcomed into that story as well too, because it's a really gorgeous work. All of the works that you guys have made are really wonderful, and you get those shared threads of the personal kind of connections you all have to the space and to the things that you're making, but also to each other as well, because there's this sort of unusual workshopping process that happens between you all as a group of artists. It does come through really interestingly in the way that the works are then presented. I think we should play a track, and then we will come back and talk a little bit more, and also talk about the artists' talks that you guys are doing at ArtSpace this afternoon. We've got a David Bowie, courtesy of Theo.
Yeah, this is Valentine's Day off the Next Day album.
David Bowie, Valentine's Day, Request of Theo, banger of a track.
It's a real banger.
Hey, Geneva's here, who you will know from Mondays on BFM, but also works at ArtSpace, and she's going to tell us about the public programs that are coming up as part of this show that we've been talking about this morning, The River Remains Ake Tonu Atu.
Cool. Hey, everybody. How's it going? So, public programs. So today we have an artist talk of the whole group, and that will be starting at 2 o'clock and ending at 3. So we're not usually open on Sundays, but this is just a nice rare opportunity to hang out at ArtSpace on a Sunday. Great.
And Liv's Halley Boy will be there, is that right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
So he's not there all the time, but if you want to come and see Liv's Halley Boy in action, sitting on top of his mirrored platform, today's the day.
Yeah, Halley Boy is there only sometimes.
Yeah, only sometimes. You don't see him all the time.
Not all the time. You don't get the honour to see Halley Boy all the time. okay, so Saturday the 22nd of September from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Sorry, that was wrong. From 2 to 3 p.m. as well. That's the director's tour with the ArtSpace director Remco de Bly. He'll take you through the artworks and talk about them as well. Then later on in October, Tuesday the 2nd of October, we have 1 plus 1 equals Many of Us, starting at 6 p.m. going to 8 p.m. And that is a knotting workshop with Wai Ching Chan and Olivia Hong. Boom. And then Thursday, the 11th of October, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., is as part of Art Week, is Electric Night. So Artspace will be having a closing event instead of a big, huge opening. We celebrated the opening with just family and friends on Friday, and then we had a soft opening yesterday, just having it open to the public.
Sorry, Geneva, just a quick question.
Oh, yes. Oh, wait, you need a microphone, Tyson.
Just wondering if it, my language, if it will be turnt?
It will be most definitely turnt.
Excellent, excellent.
What were you saying?
Kelly Boy will be there. The last day, the last day is actually on the 13th. So if you don't want to get turnt up with Hallie Boy during Art Week Electric Night, when a lot of other places are open as well, so you can just go down the whole street. Then you can come and see it on its last day on the 13th of October.
Perfect. And then also, did you talk about lunchtime layers with family as well?
Oh my gosh, sorry.
On the 6th of October from 1 p.m.?
Don't worry,
I've got you. It's all good.
Thank you. Thank you. I got very confused. So 6th of October from 1 p.m. is lunchtime layers with family Etuale. And you can, we're still deciding on the premise of it, but we will have more information regarding the materials that you bring, because there's a whole thing about that, which is going to be really cool.
Exciting. So that's a bunch of really amazing public programs that are being part of the River Remains, Ake Tonu Atu. Thank you so much, everybody, for coming up and spending your Sunday mornings with us. Tyson Campbell, Wai Ching Chan, Famile Etuale, Olivia Hong, and Bronte Perry. You guys are awesome. Head along to Artspace to check out the show. It's not open on Sundays normally, but it is open this afternoon, and you can pop along and see these guys in person, have a chat to them, and see Hallie Boy, Liv's Hallie Boy, who's not always in the space. So if you want to catch that, you should head along this arvo. I think we're going to play a Gaz Coombs track now, who's of course coming
shout
to Auckland.
Shout
out to Tyson's sister.
Shout out.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.